Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornel West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing though. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still ride, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb and shit and have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with that same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Show, the greatest podcast in the nation with Dr. Mary Lee Live. We're going to be talking about the topic of critical race theory and racism in America, part 5, solutions. The music you just heard was by Dr. Cornel West. It was done on Hitting Beats back in 2007. The first rapper was my youngest son, Jeremy, in the moment, Riz. He was the first rapper, followed by Raw Digga. Black Thought, and of course by Dr. Cornel West. And the music was produced by my oldest son, Corey Cochee Tatum. We have an exciting lineup. I'm going to introduce one of our co-hosts and producers, executive producers, Dr. James Cannon. He is the father of entertainer Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon is the ambassador of the H.R. 1242, and we're trying to raise $1 billion-plus to tell our story from 1619 to 2019. We've been extended to July 1st, 2022. And James Cannon is going to tell us a little bit about that in our show. Dr. Cannon, welcome to Dr. Mary Lee Live.
Beautiful. Can you hear me, Dr. Tatum?
I can hear you great. Go ahead, Doc.
Beautiful, everybody. I appreciate you so very much for a lot of reason tonight. I appreciate you for tuning in to Dr. Mary Lee show we've been producing for the last year and a half, almost 2 years. We're excited about this show tonight. We're excited about all the shows, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, when we have an opportunity to talk about subjects that can very easily be misunderstood, it could be subjects where it could be interpreted that we're bringing rage, we're bringing dissension, you know. But ladies and gentlemen, some things you just got to talk about. You know, some things in our family sometimes is conversation. We don't know how to have that conversation, but it's needed. I found, ladies and gentlemen, when you have those tough conversations, it's just wise to invite God into that conversation. You know, you can have it all laid out, what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, but ladies and gentlemen, because you're dealing with people, we've got to ask God into our conversations to help keep the unity, to help keep our attitudes right, to make sure our motives in coming to the conversation are right, ladies and gentlemen. And that means we have to look for, we have to come really looking for end results. We're looking for solutions. But it's a problem when people look for solutions and they really haven't examined the research. They haven't did the research. And sometimes we like to get in conversations, deep conversations, where we haven't looked at the research. We haven't done the study. We haven't done the research. It's necessary before we have the conversation to look at the research. And if everybody that's going to be in the dialogue, and if everybody has taken a look at the research that we're going to talk about, then we can talk intelligently. And then after we've had an intelligent conversation, we can call for a conclusion. We can call for answers. And so tonight, ladies and gentlemen, again, I appreciate you so very much for tuning in. And we want you to hit one on your phone if you want to get in this conversation, because that's the purpose of us having the conversation. We're the captains of this ship, but our job is to make sure that everybody's heard and everybody's respected in the conversation. And as Dr. Tatum said, you know, we've been working with the 400-year commission since 2019. We got it extended July 2020. Then we got it extended to July 2021. Then we got it extended to July 2022. But I believe it's so valuable and so important that we as a people should keep this bill open indefinitely. We should be raising money to tell our story of how we've been in this country for 400 years. If don't nobody else raise any money, if don't nobody else tell the story, then we should be first in the front of the line to raise the money to tell the story of the fact that we've been in this country for 400 years. And when we say raise the money, we mean we're going to raise $1 billion and more for this commission, because all that money is supposed to be given away to good organizations across the country that want to tell the story of Afro-American people achieving. They pushed us to the bottom. They handcuffed us, but we came to the top. And that's the key, that we are overcomers. 400 years of greatness, because we've overcame all the madness that they've dumped on us. We're overcomers, y'all. So we've been talking about 400 years of greatness, that we are a great people, and it's deep inside of us, this greatness, and it's in all of us. 400 years of greatness. That's what we've been talking about, and that's what we want to talk about, because when we talk about it and we talk about it right, then the whole world understands that we deserve reparations. We deserve our back pay for our ancestors working 246 years free of charge in this country. It's back pay. The whole world will understand who we are, and so we're going to tell this story. But tonight, it appears that they want to Shanghai the conversation about the fact that we owe reparations, and they want to take us back to first base. We on third base trying to go home. We're trying to go home with this reparations conversation so the whole world knows that the Negro people, just like the Indian people, was owed a debt. And they got seemingly their treaties that would make them happy. But we didn't get our treaties. We didn't get ours yet. So they want to come with a conversation of the critical race theory. And that's what we want to talk about tonight. And as Dr. Lee comes to take over the show, I want to impress on you that we want to be in this conversation so bad that we wrote a book on the subject. And you can get the book from Amazon. Dr. Tatum is in the book. Okay. Powerful book. Dr. Green is in the book from the 400-Year Commission, the chairman of the 400-Year Commission. The book is then the critical, how to understand the critical race facts and stop the hating after 400 years. Get the book from Amazon. They're delivered to you within 2 days, free of charge. It's a good book. I like it. How to understand the critical race facts and stop the hating after 400 years. Dr. Lee, I appreciate you, sir, ma'am, so very much for this show. I appreciate your consistency. I appreciate your love for the people, the passion that you give week after week, the moderation, the guidance that you give as you bring outstanding people week after week, Dr. Lee. You've done an outstanding job, and I appreciate you so very much. And as we enter into this conversation tonight, I appreciate you as well. We talk about the critical race facts, Dr. Lee.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Cannon, and I appreciate you. And welcome. Thank you for your just continued support. Thank you, Dr. Tatum, and also all of our behind-the-scenes helpers and staff. We appreciate you all. And we're just here as if we're sitting around in our living room and just having a conversation. So we want everyone to participate who wants to participate. All you have to do is press one on your phone, and we will open up your lines. Again, we appreciate you all. We thank you for joining us, and you are all so very, very, very welcome to be here. And before we get started, I do just would like to extend a public condolences and prayers and thoughts, family, in your loss, Dr. Cannon. And we're constantly praying for you all. And we want you to know that.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much. I appreciate everybody across the nation. You know, life is such where we have to deal with these types of issues. And, you know, they're real life issues. And, you know, sometimes when, you know, they come from out of surprise, you don't know how to deal with them. But when you have people that you've consistently built dialogue and communication with, You know, today is me, tomorrow is you, but iron sharpens iron, and we get better as we deal with each other and as we help each other. And so, again, I appreciate Dr. Lee. I appreciate you. I appreciate this forum. The same thing with my son. He had a beautiful conversation on his show and shared his heart about losing, you know, his baby son, you know, which as a father, you know, that's a touching thing. You know, as a mother, I'm sure mothers understand as well, you know. And so, you know, all the love, all the words are definitely appreciated, you know. And, you know, we get stronger so that we can get up and go on. Our ancestors had to deal with heartaches all throughout their 400 years of their children being sold, their children being thrown to alligators, their children being abused right before their eyes, and there was nothing that they could do about it. You know, so the passion is real, the movement that we're involved in is real, and it's really for our children. You know, most of us have lived our lives, and God has blessed us. You know, but this is for our children and our grandchildren that we fight, that we stand up to make sure that when they go before a world economy, our children and our grandchildren don't show up broke. Our children and grandchildren don't show up hungry, only knowing handouts. We want our children to understand 400 years of entrepreneurship too. And so, Dr. Lee, everything that you're pouring into, I believe people are taking notes, and I believe we're all getting better together. So I want to tell people I appreciate your love. My family appreciates it. But I'm saying let's go on. Let's continue with the march, the movement of going forward with what we've all started out together. I appreciate you. I appreciate the love.
Many, many, many blessings. Many blessings to you and your family. Tonight we're continuing, as already been stated, critical race theory and racism in America. We're on part five, and we're dealing with solutions. Before we got to the stage of solutions, we were just discussing the critical race theory, and, you know, which entails school systems across the country that have been thrust into a contentious national debate surrounding this theory called critical race theory. And academic framework was previously little discussed outside of universities that, you know, that examine how racism is embedded in American institutions and society. You know, from the stolen land, from Negroes, to the genocide of the indigenous, and the enslaved labor of the Africans is how this country here became a superpower. Yet, the look in the mirror at what they have done, what white ancestors were able to do and able to take to manifest their destiny of plain superiority, now, according to this critical race theory, just too much for them to handle. Thereby, they're rejecting the teaching of true history in our schools nationwide. So this is what we've been talking about. And, you know, it's an endless conversation. We're at the point now where we want to look at solutions. We want to consider what anyone has to bring to the table regarding solutions. We're making notes every single week that we're talking about solutions, because when we're done talking about the solutions, we're all together are going to develop an action plan right here on this show, okay? We're going to develop an action plan, and we're going to implement our plan. Wherever you are in the country, wherever you're calling, whatever your input is, what you like to see happen, you know, as we talk about and share, you know, our ideas on solutions, you can be a part of where we are going. Yes, we talk. We want to educate. That's part of it. And we just continue like a little circle. We'll educate. We'll teach and educate. And we'll discuss all of the issues and we'll come back and visit them. But we're going to always work on solutions, and we're going to always take action. This is what Dr. Lee is about. This is what Neighborhood Commerce Institute is about. It's about taking action. And so tonight we welcome our team. We have a medical team who's with us and who's been with us for so long now. We're going to miss Michael tonight, our 21-year-old genius, and he's working on, he's still in school, so he has to take time off occasionally to take care of his work. So, Michael, thank you. We'll be looking forward to your return in a couple of weeks, and we want to say we appreciate you so much. So we've got a medical team here, as usual. Tap your phone. Press one of your phones so we can certainly open you up. All right. But our very special guest is Mr. Robert Jamerson is with us tonight, and we're going to hear him discuss solutions with us along with everyone else. But we want to welcome Mr. Robert Jamerson. Mr. Jamerson is Chief Executive Officer of Detroit PAL. Mr. Jamerson spent more than 20 years working in corporate business. For 18 years, he worked at Pfizer, serving as district manager and emerging market leader. His two worlds of athletics and business collided when he joined the nonprofit sector and became CEO of the Detroit PAL, the Police Athletic League, right in his own hometown. PAL serves more than 15,000 youth in Michigan's largest city, Detroit, with enriching activities in 11 different sports, as well as skill-building programs in robotics, financial literacy, and other areas. Robert believes that Detroit PAL is more than just sports, which is why the organization strives to be the best at addressing socioeconomic, education, as well as health and wellness challenges of the community through creative collaboration. The only way we can combat the systemic challenges in the community is by coming together, is what he says. Through his athletic, academic, and business success, Robert has developed an appreciation for the power of personal networking. He has established a relationship with Quicken Loans that has allowed PAL to emerge into a period of growth. Robert was recently invited to join Northwood University Board of Trustees and is excited to help lead his alma mater into the future. He has also worked with Northwood Black Student Union as an alumni support leader and credits Northwood with giving him the skills to study the mindset of leaders, to think beyond the obvious, and to act as an entrepreneur within an organization. This success and dedication to his alma mater led Robert to recently being selected as a new member of the Northwood University Board of Trustees. Being a board member for the Balm of Gilead Board and Detroit Sports Commission Board, Robert's plan is to continue his career with Detroit PAL in helping youth find their greatness. Robert and his wife, Renee, live in Farmington Hills with their son, Robbie. Each year, they host a large jazz concert at their home, carrying on a family legacy of musical appreciation and creativity. Welcome, 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 Mr. Robert Jamerson. And I'm expecting an invitation to that next jazz party.
Well, thank you. Yes, hopefully you can hear me now. I'm truly excited and honored to be here. I've been looking forward to this since last week. When I think about what's already been discussed, I definitely know, as always, we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. We a lot of times drink out of wells that we didn't dig. And so I'd be remiss not to thank many of you who have paved the way and continue to shed light on the issues that we should be focused on, and really understanding the importance of all of us coming together. I hope to bring to this conversation really stimulating some of the thoughts that many of us have had, but more importantly, thinking about what can you do, where you sit, where you stand, where your network lies, to be able to be the difference and the change that you want to see. Many times we talk about the protest, but before the protest comes the opportunity to be able to lay a strong foundation for the actions that each of us can take where we sit. Earlier in the call, I know we were talking about data, and I love data. My pharmaceutical background really highlights the data. But when you start thinking about the data, the challenges are strong. So, you know, when I just look, and I'm going to use some of this data from Detroit, but I'm sure it's very relevant wherever you sit in any of those communities. You know, poverty in Detroit, over 47% of the children in the city of Detroit live in poverty. Let that sink in. In America, when you start thinking about police relations, in America, only 40% of African Americans have a favorable view of police. And no, I'm at the Detroit Police Athletic League. Fewer than 10% of Detroit high school students are college ready based on college entrance exams. And we know those exams have typically really not been in our best interest when we start describing what our kids are capable of. 90%, and this is Detroit public school teachers and principals, reported that more than half of their students have been impacted by trauma. When you start thinking about the different tragedies that have recently occurred, like even in the Michigan area in Oxford, the shooting, the mass shooting in the high school that just occurred, many of our students face a lot of these situations on a day-to-day basis, and most of the time it goes undressed. It becomes a social norm in a lot of the communities. And then this stat right here, which is troubling, 85% of third graders in English language arts and 88% of eighth graders in math did not meet grade level standards. And so for me, in looking at this data, we don't need another study, right? So it's really important that we start focusing in on what are some of these solutions. And we also must realize that as I may share some things that, you know, have been working or some ideas around how to make it work, there's not one way. There's not one approach, right? There are messengers that are all around, including many of you that are on this call, who have had some solutions, who have been doing some of this great work. So I applaud you, but know that we have more work to do, and excellence is the only expectation that we can settle for. So in this, I'm going to speak to just a couple things, and I'll ask Dr. Lee and others to chime in to really question it, to bring some insights into your own experiences, and really, as was mentioned earlier by Dr. Lee, let's make this a conversation. So my background really is relevant when you start thinking about in looking at finding solutions, because I can't speak to any other person's experience better than I can speak to mine. So my background is that I was, as a 9-year-old, just coming back from my parents who had divorced. I was in California for a while. I ended up coming back to Detroit because in a lot of families, the mom is there and she's doing the best she can do to her means. But the kids are at home and have a lot of idle time. So if you can think about all the different hustles and the fast pace in California, even at a young age, I think I learned how to pitch the quarters against the wall to make some dollars. I've learned how to go to the grocery store and hustle to bag grocery, but also had some other enterprises taking place that was allowing me to be able to make ends meet, but also provide for some of the shortcomings that weren't taking place at home. And all I can say is that it was a blessing that, as my dad, like many men aren't credited for, he came and saw that there were some opportunities for me to have a better structure and a little more focus. And my mom saw that need in balancing two other kids, or brothers and sisters, that I ended up coming to Detroit. And on my pathway to Detroit, I'm there one day walking down the street to go do what we typically do in the neighborhood, go pick up a pack of cigarettes and some other things from the store for our grandparents, our moms and dads. And that's, if you live long enough, you knew that's what took place. I see these little league kids with football helmets on and shoulder pads on. And for me, I just glazed over there and could not take my eyes off of it. So as I walked closer to it and I saw that they were my size, that they had on equipment that I'd always run around the house hoping that I could have one day, that my interest was hooked then. And based on that, say 20-plus years later, I had experienced the height of heights in a high school career, and that we won a state championship in football. I probably played with basketball with one of the top scorers that ever came out of Michigan to get close to a semifinals in that. And it offered me and afforded me the opportunity and a scholarship to get to Northwood University, where now I have my MBA from and I sit on their board. And so what I speak to right now are just what are some of the key things that allow for me, in spite of an environment, in spite of some of the challenges, to be able to make things happen. And it starts with our new mission at Detroit PAL, and it's really someone seeing the greatness within me. And so our mission shifted based off of a lot of the tragedies, triumphs, and stepping stones that I had in my life, to say that, guess what, as Jay-Z said, all of us have some greatness within us, right? And it's just a matter of sometimes breaking through. I believe that there's been this cultural conditioning that has come to manifest itself in all of us in a lot of times on how society, how the world has depicted us. And so in knowing that we ourselves possess the most powerful voice that you can have, and that's your voice, because you speak to yourself probably three-thirds of your or 75% of the time in your life. So it really is important that we understand the power of that voice and what we provide with it, even when we sometimes know that the odds have been against us. And so when you start thinking about how we've been marginalized, underestimated, and undervalued, that voice can become loud if you let it. And so our mission at Detroit PAL is to begin to surround them with these mentors and surround them with this community that allows them to see the greatness within. And we leverage sports as that platform where people run to it to be able to tap them into these other experiences, exposures, that then equip them into becoming the young men and young women that we all know that they can become. When you think about equity and you think about diversity and you think about inclusion, I usually start with equity, because equity is where everyone just wants an even playing field to be able to compete. And what's been taken from us in a lot of ways, or been systemically and systematically put in place, has prevented us from having that equity. We're not asking for things to be fair, but we do want equity when it comes to being able to speak and be able to understand and have a platform to be able to be the change that we know the world needs, when you start thinking about all of us have something to bring to be a difference maker. When I think about the role that we need and we've seen success with in the community, it really starts with being able to help people to think critically, right? And having that critical thinking skill is such an important role. And it, when you think about our youth today and the challenges that they face, a lot of them, when you sit down and really survey them, when you sit down and really listening to them, when you ask them how are they doing, and you really listen with an open ear, you realize that they are challenged, right? They are concerned. They are overwhelmed with a lot of the barriers that have been put in place. And what it sets them up for is to begin to make excuses as to how this environment has affected them versus really looking at this resilience that they have within them that have been placed in them from their ancestors who have overcome even much more challenges. And so it is all of our roles to be able to position them in a way where they can begin to ask themselves and ask others the right types of questions, right? And so when you start thinking about what can you do to get them to be able to see the best in themselves, it's the questions that you can ask them to have them to think about, but listen before you begin to provide the answers to the things that you're asking them. Because what you'll realize is that, man, a lot of them have listened more than you thought they were listening, and they know more than you thought they know, and they're capable of much more than you believe that they're capable of. Because once again, as I mentioned earlier, there's been this cultural conditioning that can cause even you, yes, you, to believe the narrative that they want us to believe. And so the next step is that communication skill. One of the things that a lot of people have seen through the years is that our young men especially, if you were thinking about their ability to communicate, a lot of them you would think just are numb to what's been around them, numb to what they've been impacted by, meaning seeing some of their friends die at early ages or with this social media that we deal with of being able to be at the point and witness things and experience trauma even when it is directly next to you. So we are on a hyper type of time frame right now that we're in when it comes to the trauma that we're exposed to that truly goes untreated. I mean, if you don't have a therapist in your life at this time, I don't care what age, I don't care what gender, I don't care what background, you are destined to fall short. And what I mean is we speak to it in different ways. That counsel or therapist could be that wise counsel that you have, meaning that you need this trusted source, but you also need this therapist that has and comes with a skill set and an expertise that your uncle, your grandma, your mama, or your aunt may not bring to the table. They may love you and have your best interest in mind, but a lot of times they may give you more misinformation about the things and the ways you should be looking at some of the challenges that you're faced with. So the next step would be to make sure that you have and you get this therapist in your life. And I know I'm fortunate because in my background at Pfizer, I had exposure to all these therapists and psychiatrists and understanding to what is going on in society. And so to have a Dr. Curtis Longs, who I call a friend that I can speak to, or to be able to speak to a Dr. Leno and have her address our team at Pfizer when we were dealing with, PAL, when we were dealing with COVID, is a difference maker, right? And I challenge each of you, once again, if you don't have a therapist, if you don't have someone that is licensed to be able to help you, not if it happens, but when it happens, that's the next step. And our youth definitely need that. It's not in saying let's medicate them, because I'm totally against the types of medications that our youth have been exposed to, especially a lot of it is unneeded. But more importantly, we all need to be able to, when asked that question, feel the comfort and feel the openness to be able to release when they ask you, how are you really doing, right? And so that's in a lot of ways goes back to just the importance of how we teach our young men and young women how to communicate. And so some of the things that we put in place and are bringing back are just the importance of debate, right, and being able to take the data and then take information and be able to critically think about what was put in front of you, right? And because if we don't learn and teach our youth how to do that, then this data and this overwhelming information that's at the fingertip of Google and social media will overwhelm them with misinformation. Mm-hmm. And far too long, we've been making bad decisions and we've been caught up in many of the tragedies that the world faced because of the lack of knowledge and lack of understanding and the lack of ability to do our own research. Be it Fox, be it CNN, we've all been in that position where you watch something and somebody tells you what you should have seen, what you should have believed, what you should believe, and how you now should act. It is time for us to help our youth and help our people begin to think critically and be able to ask themselves the questions without having to fall in line with whatever someone else says. One of the things that I love about any of these discussions is that we need to have some people that think differently, that see things differently, because if everybody's going in the same direction, we might be missing something, right? And so it doesn't mean that you have to go in that direction, but more importantly, it causes you to think what if, and also to have empathy for someone that may be leaning or going in some other direction. So we spend a lot of time with a lot of our programs intentfully looking at addressing things at different levels. So, for instance, that third grade reading, we tend to make sure that we align to literacy at 4 to 8-year-olds, right? Why is that important? Well, we look at that as before a youth can cross the street by themselves without getting hit by a car, that's typically the time that you still have a parent or a guardian or someone in their life that has to bring them there. And when they bring them, it's the richest place for change, meaning that you have a mentor, you have a guardian, and you have the child and the community there at the same time. And when you have that guardian or that parent, if you can help to change their trajectory, you have the best opportunity to have a rapid change in that youth's trajectory. And so at that age, we start with literacy. We emphasize it in so many ways. We build it into it by partnering with different literacy programs to improve that third grade reading, you know, challenge that we see. But also we read to them and we mimic it. So, for instance, we have a program called Books Before Ball. So taking the same concept that a lot of the college athletes had where you come in as a freshman and now you're in a study hall type of format. When our little hoopers come, which are our 5 to 8-year-olds, when they first show up, before we bring a ball out for them to dribble, before we have them do drills, before we have them do all those fun activities, we break them into groups of 3 to 5. We pull out a book, and while their parents are observing on the side, we read to them. And it is powerful, especially when we bring in special guests such as our police officers when they read to them, because now when you start thinking about addressing police relations, to be able to have and see police officers in this other setting, giving back, volunteering, you begin as a parent or guardian to be able to look at them and say, well, not all police officers are bad, and we know that for a fact, right, because some of our family, friends are police officers. And even though the media can show the ones that are doing these terrible things, we know that if it wasn't for police officers, a lot of our neighborhoods would not be safe. And so imagine these kids that are now getting read to, and now these parents requesting the book that they're being read, getting read to them. And in that, we establish what's the number one thing we're trying to do at this early age, getting them to think about the importance of being great and starting with the goal setting that we set out with them. The next level is that we then, after building this foundation of literacy and being able to expose them to the sports that they're interested in, the next step is then to align them to these other youth enrichment activities that causes them to explore. So we tap into our organizations that offer science, right? And so it's not uncommon that we don't partner with someone that offers robotics or they offer drones. I'll target drones as one of the areas that we do. We know a lot of our kids love the remote controls in their hands. And one of the things that we've learned is that sometimes the young ladies actually are even better when it comes to managing those remote controls. So when it comes to drones and attracting them in to try drones, man, we capture them. They come in there, and next thing you know, their interest causes them to now tap into, well, how are the drones programmed, right? What's the coding that causes the drones to be able to fly different patterns? And then we start training them on Six Sigma, right, which Six Sigma leads to supply chain management, which is one of the most critical jobs that we've seen during COVID, that is needed right now. So all that to say is that now you start shaping and begin to getting those youth to explore what else they can become great in. And how it works is those relationships now can be shown with these youth that then when I go and talk to a Dow Chemical, who happens to have the largest drone fleet in the world, and I introduce those youth and expose those youth to the Dow Chemical team, that team was so impressed by these kids at this young age being trained in Six Sigma white belt training that then they began to say, how do we give these kids more exposure to be able to diversify this community, but more importantly, begin to shape and see this pipeline for the future employees, employers, entrepreneurs, and intrapreneurs. And so when you start thinking about what that looks like, it takes all of us to be able to build. We have to reach into the corporations. We have to connect with other nonprofits. We have to connect with the public schools. We have to connect with the police department. We have to connect with our churches and institutions. And all I'm saying is that we have to be the very best at collaboration, right? We have to be open because when you're trying to help a youth find their greatness, it's not about who's getting the credit. It's about the seeds that are planted and understanding that someone may be pruning, someone may be nurturing, someone may be replanting. But at the end of the day, our ultimate goal is to have them reach their greatness. So, Dr. Lee, I've shared and spoke a lot, and would definitely open it up for some questions or some discussion, because definitely I know a lot of things come when people have some ideas and thoughts that are out there. Would love to be able to help to learn from this group as well as share some other insights if there are any questions.
And this is just you've given an abundance of information and data. You brought so many issues to the forefront here, and and solutions. And so, one thing that I'm a real stickler for is you mentioned the media. How the media resources is delivering misinformation and telling us what to believe, what to think, how to feel, and all of that. And you mentioned, the importance of critical learning, the critical thinking, and so that we can, learn the truth and be able to understand who we are, how we got to where we are. And I want to give others opportunity, of course, but on the critical thinking part, correcting the youth, the young people, as well as adults, but I'm kind of like feeling and believing that it's extremely important, as you emphasize, 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, the babies, starting to instill and teach the babies. But then we've got the older, youth who don't know how to think for themselves, you might say, and as well as adults. And of course, therapy, I think helps, education helps. But how do we get them into a mindset of understanding and knowing that this is needful? Because when people appear or feel, they've grown up this way, so this is the norm for them. And so I find that's something that's really extremely heavy, on my heart because of the work that I do. I want to be able to help people, but then it's very difficult to help people, who've brainwashed. All of us have been. Some of us are awakening, and
you know, educating ourselves and doing what we're doing tonight. But how do we reach those who appear or seem to not be listening? Or it's just, you know, their home life. That's a burden. It really is a burden for me.
Yeah, so I can speak to that. The secret sauce for Detroit Police Athletic League has been really the reliance on mentors. And a lot of people that have played sports, we've just been fortunate to have coaches who have, to their best abilities, have taught many of us through sports, you know, and they've shown love through the discipline that you get and the structure that you get and the consistency that you get by playing a sport. Consistency is so important when you start thinking about building trust and to become a trusted source, meaning that when those kids show up to practice, that coach is going to be there. And that coach, most of the time, they're going to maintain that same demeanor. So now they have that same consistency in their approaches. And the coaches that really get it understand the importance of having and leveraging teachable moments that occur and when they occur. And teachable moments are when a person falls short and you don't chastise them, you don't degrade them, but you begin to have them to question why and how did they do that, what was their intent. And then when they begin to see that if their intent is this and the goal is to achieve this, then they're either working towards that or they're working against it. And so it's nothing like having that trusted source. What we are obligated to do now, though, is to make sure that trusted source is partnered with someone or something or including an expertise, right? And so one of the things that we do at Detroit PAL is that we mandate a training that we do that's called Impact Training that teaches our coaches what it really means to be a mentor and their role in being a mentor and the power of being a mentor, right? Because a lot of us, we'll establish different roles, but a lot of times in that expertise, we don't become equipped to be able to handle and understand when is it time to pass off this youth to someone that can offer the expertise that they need. So, for instance, an example is, hey, you may lose a football game, and I'll just stick to that, and the kid, one kid goes through the line, and they slap five with each other, and they're mad, and they're pouting, and they may even have some tears. But another kid now takes his helmet off, hits the kid in the head with a helmet, and is fighting the coach and doing that. So some of those behaviors, we see that they're challenged when it comes to the understanding of them being able to hold themselves accountable and control their actions and their behavior. There's ability to not be able to regulate. They're typically under that. Could be trauma that may have gone untreated, and or there may have been this enabling that a lot of the players may get by coaches because they see this kid as a good athlete, for instance. And so when you start thinking about what's occurred, typically we have to be able to understand and be able to teach them what they control, right? The environment they don't control, but they can still control their effort, their attitude, actions, and behavior. And when you begin to stop and listen, you uncover all types of trauma that's gone untreated. And once you begin to have those discussions or you align them with someone that is good at being able to address and have those discussions, it changes them. And I can speak to, I'm not sure if Dr. Curtis Longs is on, but he's caught me many a times where there are kids that are within the juvenile system who have done some things, but because he's had this dialogue with them, because he's been able to have them to think about some of their decisions and getting them to think about what does love look like, what does discipline look like, why is it important, they then begin to unlearn what they believe love was or how they believe love has been demonstrated in their lives. So those are just a couple examples, but it speaks to the importance of being and having the patience to uncover some of these things, and it takes time. You can't just talk at people. You can't just talk at kids and believe that they're just going to get it, right? You have to begin to get them to ask themselves the questions. The only way they can learn about the questions that they're going to ask themselves is by you asking those questions and intentfully being patient to be able to listen to see and get a response from them.
Right. We saw that being a little bit out of control. What was that, a few weeks ago on the courts, the basketball courts? So, yeah, it can go into adulthood, and we know it does. We know it does. But let's ask our listening audience. I know we've got a lot of hands here raised, but I want to go to, I believe we have Dr. Karen Walker. Are you here tonight? I do believe I see you, and I would like to ask you, it's been a while since we've heard from you, and I'd like to give you the floor now. Dr. Karen Walker, are you there? Okay, so we'll go to Dr. Moncrief. Dr. Moncrief here.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. For inviting me to be part of the panel discussion tonight on continuing the critical race theory and racism in America. I appreciate the comments that were just made by Mr. Jameson. I think he's right on target with PALS and finding solutions. I think we need to do what needs to be done to get the critical race theories taught in the classrooms, okay? I don't understand why there's so much resistance to telling the truth. We know the truth hurts, okay? And we know the truth times is hard to swallow, but you need to know the truth, and we need to teach the truth. We need to teach the truth about the different people who built this country. You know, I can talk from a physician's perspective because I'm a physician and a healthcare provider. But we need to talk about the contributions that were made to this country other than white contributions that were made to this country. And we need to teach those things. Why? Because we need to install in all our children a sense of pride, a sense of understanding, and a sense that we're all human and capable of making mistakes. But we need to be able to show our children that we've made some remarkable contributions to our history. And for some reason, that threatens white people to know the truth about the contributions that black people make. So we need to start teaching those things in the classroom. We need to find out why people are so resistant and then try to get them to understand that they don't need to be resistant to the truth. They just need to let the truth be out there. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that Mr. Jameson makes us think about is, once we do introduce critical race theory into the classroom, and I think we have no choice but to do that, then we can find out solutions on how we can fix our own problems. We can fix our children. We can understand and make our children understand why some of them react to situations with laughter, respond to the same situation with taking their helmet and hitting another child. We need to be able to fix that among ourselves, among our kids. So I think it's important. What Mr. Jameson was saying, he's actually at the next step of once the critical race theory is introduced into the classroom, the next step is what do we do with that information? Thank you.
And thank you so very much. Very, very good. Very good points. Dr. Long, are you here? You are live, Dr. Long.
Hi, good afternoon. Good evening to everyone. Thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, for your ongoing commitment and wisdom and increasing the insight to our community. I want to give a special thanks to Mr. Robert Jameson. The work they're doing at Detroit PAL and the work that he's done even prior to his involvement with Detroit PAL is enormous. Going back to when I first met Mr. Jameson while working in one of the community mental health agencies this real tall, athletic-looking guy comes in. He's representing Pfizer. And it's just his unique approach to command the attention not only of the physicians who were working at the time at this facility, but also how that encompasses reaching families and patients in terms of their specific treatment and whether or not they should trust the use of any sort of a medication. Is that type of a talent and a gift is, you know, we need more of. Robert, I'd say when you started speaking, you were talking about how you how you were focused or became interested in Detroit PAL. You know, I was just thinking, wow, you know, during my time coming around that age, you know, I don't know if individuals on the call recall the sport of baseball. You know, that was it as far as the east side of Detroit. I'd say most of Detroit at that time. But mm-hmm. if you look at in Detroit metropolitan area, the lack of baseball fields and therefore the lack of African-American males in the National Baseball Association, you know, so when you're trying to engage kids now, being able to use some of the great African-Americans who created such a wide attention toward baseball, like Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente, and the others, you know, it's really somewhat of a challenge. The thing I wanted to contribute tonight, again, was associated with what I stated my solution was in terms of myself, and a lot of this was talked about in Mr. Jameson's speech and the speech of Dr. Moncrief. It's that I pledge to be more consistent in my level of patience for us, particularly the youth. I'll just share an example today downtown. In the juvenile detention facility, a young man who's in probably the most closed, isolative area in that facility, and there was an ongoing discussion with him about his social skills and socialization. And this kid has had some interest in athletics, however, that all went somewhat awry once his close brother, his very close sibling was killed. He was actually murdered. So, you know, in terms of how we look at solutions, you know, this is a challenge for this kid to be in this facility for a charge that, you know, he would say that he didn't have anything involved with. But, of course, you know, I can see the data and all that, and he did. Yet, today, my focus was about running. And so, you know, I started the conversation by suggesting to him that he's running away from his freedom. And he was like, well, what are you talking about? Because he's getting a tether. I said, well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your ability to accept that you're free. And again, this kid is 16. You know, he survived the streets, but he's just he said it's puzzling in terms of what I'm talking to him about. So in terms of my persistence with him, I had to find another approach to try to reach him. So we're talking about running. He's talking about athletics, and so I said, well, you know, why don't we go down to the quote Jesse Owens gym that is in this facility? And he's been down there a million times. It never dawned on him to ask the question, despite this large mural of this great Olympian being Jesse Owens. So that led to not only him acknowledging, well, Jesse Owens, and initially he thought it was a female because he said, well, how many guys have a name of Jesse? That's the lady's name. So, again, educating on him in the proper spelling of Jesse for men, while also coming back from my office and going to a video of who this individual was, which then opened the door and exploring the whole concept of Nazi Germany, superiority versus inferiority, and, of course, showing him the footage of Jesse Owens winning 4 gold medals in, I believe, the 1939 Olympics while standing in front of Adolf Hitler and his superiority complex and issues. So, you know, as far as the critical race theory, critical race education, I use this particular time to try to explain to this young man based on what he brought to me, which was a lack of knowledge of himself, education, and all the things we've done in America, particularly based on the vehicle of sport. So my conclusion is that, and I'm going to adopt my thing from 2 weeks ago, that I believe this is an example of maintaining my commitment to be consistent in my level of patience for this kid, because, you know, the road to understanding sometimes, I think some of us, we get bogged down by how long it's going to take. Well, in actuality, when it comes to our young kids and ourselves and educating the masses, you know, we can't put a timetable on that, I don't believe. So, you know, that would be my contribution tonight. And again, I want to thank Mr. Robert Jameson for being so spontaneous when I call him at 1:30 p.m. and he's probably doing board meetings. And I've already talked about sports, athletics, math, et cetera, to some of the young men who have actually been a part of PAL. And so to be able to call him on the spot and he answers, and they see his photo on this internet page, being the executive director of PAL, and for him to deliver a message that is heartfelt, sincere, I mean, I can't measure that. And again, I want to thank Robert for always being there and wish him well in his future endeavors, and he knows what I'm talking about, and he always has my support.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah, really nice. Really nice to hear that. Dr. Lawrence knows how much I respect and appreciate him from all different levels. He does the same when, whether it's a family member or a friend, he has that patience that he talked about. I think what he was able to do and you can listen to is when I was mentioning earlier around the types of questions and how you gain their attention by having them to ask themselves those questions, right? And then you got to have the patience and time and consistency to be able to now walk them through some of these things that many may say, oh, this should just be obvious to the eye, or they should just know this. Because we Google the things that really in a lot of ways are nonsense to really get them to Google and look into their history and begin to see it, but then give them context to it is what a lot of times people lack. Because you can look at something and see it, but if you don't know what was occurring at that time that would cause them to feel or cause someone else to react, then you really miss the really valuable teachable moments that are within that. And so when I hear and get a call from Dr. Longs, it really is all of us playing a role, and I see that as me having an opportunity to play a role. When you think about what it's really going to take, they're really, you can't go in with just one source. You can't go in with just one approach. You have to be able to partner and connect and align across the board with anticipation of some of the shortcomings that are going to be there versus going in and thinking that you're ready. You got to already know that if you look at the data that our kids are going to have this trauma, so to go and speak to them. And once trauma is uncovered, you can't be surprised. More importantly, you need to have a trusted source ready with that expertise and waiting, right? And so in knowing that, you got to go out and find out who's good at what they do, how do they do it, what part of town are they on, what barriers are there. So then it's not if, once again, it's when we're prepared. And so when you start talking about building solutions, you have to build those coalitions. And you have to be thinking about the barriers, and you have to have their input to understand what those barriers are and truly trust that they're barriers versus what many may say are just excuses.
and then go from there. So I thank you, Dr. Longs, and if there are any other questions, would love to hear that or hear insights from people.
Yes, thank you so very much, and you just continue to emphasize collaboration and patience and, you know, for positive results and building, you know, these coalitions. And this is what we talk about and continue to try to stress. We cannot overly emphasize the need in our communities for working together for positive results. And this is why we're yet here today, you know, nearing 2 years on this show. So we're going to go to, I know Dr. Tynes is on, Dr. Don Tynes. And then after Dr. Don Tynes, and then we're going to go to our co-host. I know they're anxious to chime in here, Dr. Tynes.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Lee. And I appreciate Brother Jameson and Dr. Longs and Dr. Marcus and everyone from contributing. And I just listened to a moment in with the question, but some background. Dr. Asa Hillier, renowned scholar, did the research in California, and they looked at gangs. And what they saw, that in a gang, it provides you with a family, it provides you with structure. And those coming from dysfunctional home where there was no structure, a gang provided that, where they felt like they were overlooked, minimized, or there was too many other kids, or the parents were too busy. They had attention when they were in the gang. And then what I looked at in the analysis and in the studies that I've done down in Detroit with the Community Task Force for Education, when we brought the African-centered curriculum to the Detroit public schools and turned them around academically, one of the key things that was there was everybody, every human being is looking to be recognized, and that goes with the self-esteem. And so the gang provides that. And then me, like Dr. Longs, being a football player, basketball player, a gymnast, and a track person, the athletics brings, you know, attention, but it also brings a family. It brings some camaraderie, and it brings some recognition from that group. And so PALS in the city of Bend Harbor, I coach for PALS, but the commitment of the adults and the coaches was poor. And the kids called them out is that the adults really only care about weed and maybe, you know, partying in that aspect and not really the youth. So that's why it's so outstanding that he was able to resurrect the PALS and that he was able to get rid of the distractors. I am the team physician for the Bend Harbor public school system, and this year I had to be their trainer because we didn't have one. And what I found was that African-American coaches who were set in the old ways were fighting against the current head coach who was black. And I've been there since 2002, and what I saw that when it was a white coach, they would hold their breath until the white coach told them to breathe. But when it was another black like themselves from the neighborhood, that they gave him hell. And I had to help them to create A Square. And I would like for y'all to pick that up down in Detroit. A Square means academic athlete. A Square, like the Ann Arbor, A to the second power, means academic athlete. And putting the PAL symbol, and I made t-shirts to go with that. And everybody who had a 3.0 on the football team and above got the t-shirts with the football backward. So it made them stand out in the school, and it's a badge of honor, badge of pride, just like, you know, being on a sport. And so now they stand out, got self-esteem, and of course I hit them with Black history and stuff like that. And I had to listen to them. That's another thing you said. And once you find out is that the youth of today don't really speak in full sentences, but they speak in text. So they're a text generation, and if you listen to them and their text conversation with you, then it starts to make sense. If you're looking for a full sentence conversation, you're going to maybe get frustrated and lost. So I'm supporting the listening, and I'm also saying that how each generation has a style of speaking, this generation, when they communicate with each other, it's almost like it's like using a cell phone. That's how they communicate. We even saw people at one time a couple of years ago, that's how they were writing. The other thing with the youth that we found that the youth were frustrated because they were interacting with racism, and the adults were not preparing them or letting them know that racism still exists and they were catching hell. And a lot of them say adults are liars and frauds, and that is true because we don't tell them that there's racism out there. We try to pretend that it doesn't exist or don't want to tell them and see if maybe it won't happen to them. It's like telling somebody they can go ahead and walk across that creek and hope that the alligators won't bite them. You know, so we have to look at that. And then as an instructor, I found that I do the Future Doctors, Future Leaders program, and I said this earlier, you may not have heard, but I had to first do the I Am Somebody Club. I had to first do the I Am Somebody Club before I could do the Future Doctors Club. So that self-esteem, African-centeredness, because remember, we're the only race that doesn't do it. And then historically, we see that every movement that the African-American has made in the United States was always tied in to movement of history. Martin Delaney, Marcus Garvey, J.A. Rogers, Arthur Schoenberg, and later, you know, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, on this other thing. So that's so critical. We're the only race that doesn't emphasize that at this particular point in junction, and we're the only race that's still behind. And if we can't blacken up, that means our children are going to whiten up, and the black middle class was the black-skinned white middle class that took over from the grassroots and did not progress forward. Dr. Claude Anderson tells you, you've been marching and haven't moved an inch. You've been marching but haven't moved an inch economically, socially, politically. And Dr. Claude Anderson did the study in 1960 and did it again in 1999 and saw that you had 103 politicians throughout the whole United States, 103 politicians. And during that movement, we got the Civil Rights Bill, the Affirmative Action Bill, and that we were fighting, but then we chose the wrong goals and didn't make a move. But then 30 years later, we went up to 9,000 individuals in politics, and you had less. The economic indicators went backwards. They got worse. As you increase the number of blacks in politics, the blacks look out for themselves, but not for the black race. And so that's what's unique, where this young man is looking out for his race and looking out for his community, that he's doing that. The other thing that me and Dr. Long have in common, that we treat absent daddy disorder or absent daddy at home disorder, but also medically that's called ADD or ADHD. And I don't use stimulants and narcotics. I try to use the other medications. And what Dr. Long has showed me to do is that I've done, this is what I would like my brother Jameson, is that what I do is I run a community garden program. And what's impressive is that my ADD kids, my ADDH kids, when they're working that garden, when they're doing the lawnmower or the roller tiller or the hoeing and digging, they don't have ADD or ADHD. They're out there, they're doing stuff. And what happens is we have to look at people's learning style. Now, I was just exposed today from Johnson & Johnson, said this, Dr. Fong's pay attention. Johnson & Johnson said the kids or adults who are kids who have ADD or ADHD or even autism, what they found is that the autism, or they call the variant or Asperger, that autistic person who becomes functional and can go to college, they found that they look at problems and solve things so differently, abstract, that Johnson & Johnson is trying to recruit those individuals because they bring a different view to the table. So by saving these styles with different learning styles, that make it happen. And when you think about these thugs, gangbangers, stuff like that, I don't know if Dr. Long's remember, but I had the Bible and the ball. I ran a basketball camp where I taught basketball to youth and older kids, older adults in their 20s. But you had to first do the Bible, then we did the ball, and we all had to do certain chants. I said, what are you? They had to say, genius. Where do you come from? Kings and queens. What's your job? Nation builder. How do we learn? Each one, teach one. What's the three L's? Look, listen, and learn. And the most important lesson in life is nothing. Nothing beats a failure but a try. As long as I keep trying, I never fail. That was all mandatory before they started playing basketball. So what I'm asking Brother Jameson is that starting to add something like that, that we start to subconsciously work on changing the mindset. And what you're doing is terrific. Now we need to uplift the self-esteem. As a doctor of internal medicine and pediatrics, a historian and an educated professor, that's what I see stepping on my door. And with Dr. Anderson, when he ran the whole state of Indiana education, he found that all the black colleges wasn't busting a great, according to him, because they were teaching the people with the MBA to be slaves and not slave owners. In other words, he said they were not teaching the people to run businesses and start new corporations. They were teaching people to get a job and maintain the status quo. So the greatness aspect, being leaders, being business owners, don't just be a football player, be the manager of your own football team or owner of your own football team. That's what I'm asking today, that if that can be kind of integrated into your program and power. I think it's terrific because what people don't understand that most of black America, as if you look at the data, especially from Dr. Paul Anderson, what they'll say is that 1% is conscious, 2% is semi-conscious because they're battling with their black identity, call them self-conscious, call them African self-esteem, but not really doing anything. But the other 97% are basically kind of lost and found the program and not really fighting and doing anything to contribute. And that's just not the African-American race, but you'll find it also in Africa, that in Africa they tend to be pro-European, pro-white, and that and what Dr. Anderson says, how your God looks is also going to be who you look up to and who you believe in and who you're going to aspire to be. And what's going to determine how you treat others. And so we have to start turning towards ourselves and start loving ourselves. And what I did this year, we did the A-square, academic athletes, put on the back of the shirt, says one team, one family, unity equals a win. And I'm going to pass that on to you. One team, one family, unity, and the equal sign, then the equals the win, because that fighting amongst themselves, and you said it. I mean, I had to make sure that our own team members didn't fight on the sideline with a game, and I had to always focus them on the field. That's where you take the fight. That's where you battle, but you don't fight yourself, because I think we've been conditioned to do that. So those are some points, and I wonder how you feel or can reflect on those issues that or questions or suggestions that I put in on you. Thank you.
No, I think really helpful. I love, especially when people have the real-world experiences and showing that they've been in the battle, they've gotten dirty, and they understand that it really starts with listening to the youth and meeting them where they're at, from the language that they're speaking to, listening and believing them when they say this is how they feel. And then I am big on just the importance of self-confirmations and speaking it into life, because I think there is power in your words and what you say to yourself. And sometimes you have to have somebody to orchestrate that and shake off that. And so that's how we shifted to our mission being helping youth find their greatness. And I leveraged a lot of that Muhammad Ali, I am the greatest. And we put it into a great model. The great model speaks to a way and gives you a platform to be able to instill a lot of those things that you just mentioned. And it stands simply for the G is goal setting. So the number one thing we do, and now we make sure we reinforce, is if you don't have a, if you got a vision, we make you write it down. And so the goals that we have you write down, we get you a journal and begin to have you to speak out and write out some things as you are confessing them, right? Because if you write them down and track them, you got a better chance of achieving them. The second thing is we begin to leverage your environment by talking about the R being resilience. So we share with them, you just ran an extra mile that somebody else didn't run today, which causes you to believe and say and speak that you did more, I feel great, I feel whatever, and you get them to begin to see that their environment can now be shifted as to how they see themselves and how they see what they're capable of doing. The E is embracing healthy lifestyles. Both physically and mentally. And then the A is accountability, that every day they have an opportunity to choose what they do, but it's their choice. And then T is that teamwork that I mentioned earlier. The other thing that you brought up that I think is really important is that we have to, when you start thinking about the importance of finding solutions, is that there are things that we can do even right now instead of waiting, and things that we can demand when it comes to being able to give our youth, our families, our people these experiences, right? When you start talking about really having equity, it means that I can now position someone else to have this experience. So now when they get there, it's not the first time when they're sitting down talking in an interview and they're applying for a job and they can't speak to having an opportunity to do it. It's one thing to be on and know and heard what took place in a boardroom. And then when you get ready to go and apply for that job and you've never been on that side of the boardroom because you've never been privy to what's over there, it is very difficult to compete. And truly, when someone is selecting someone, them have an opportunity to see the best in you. That's why if any of you are part of a corporation or part of an organization, I challenge you to go to your HR department and make sure that when they begin to bring internships in, right, and have interns, that you carve out some of those interns for the talent that you're able to help them to find. Because what they may say is they can't find the talent. They can't attract this group. But you then have to go and make sure that you find that talent, because we know it's there, to be able to challenge those HR departments to give those internships and those experiences that will allow them to be equipped to be able to take on those opportunities and truly compete for them when they're there. The other thing that I would challenge people to do, and this was something that Colin Powell taught his people and one of my mentors shared with me, it's a concept called PI, right? And the PI concept, if you were to draw a circle, it stands for something, meaning the P stands for performance, the I stands for image, and the E stands for exposure. And so what Colin Powell shared with some of his military people was that he knew that he was going to advance the way he was going to advance because he understood the power of Powell when it came to how people select people, how people choose people, how people advance. And this is something that I challenge each of you to challenge your young people or challenge yourself when you're thinking about it. Many people, when you start thinking about this PI concept, will put a heavy emphasis on performance. And what Colin Powell shared with them is that when you're thinking about a pie equaling 100%, one being 10, one being 30, and one being 60%, he said that 10% of the time performance causes people to be selected for opportunities. And that may shock people, right, because you'll say, man, I'm going to put my head to the ground, and I'm going to achieve this and get this award. I'm going to get this degree. And then you show up with your performance, and you find out, when you go after those better positions, performance just gets you in the game. Performance is something that is just reasonable service. When you're sitting in an interview and you start asking, get asked those questions, you're naming an award, but somebody else can come in and name an award as well. The performance is good. It gets you in the game. But we need to make sure that we share with youth, we share with family members that performance just gets you into the game. But when you start thinking about image, that has a heavier weighting. It makes up about 30% when you start thinking about making a difference and getting in some of those opportunities. So what is that image? I think in the last session, Mark Bland spoke around the sagging pants or how people can perceive you based off of how you're dressed or how you speak or your posture, right, or who you hang around. It wasn't uncommon at Pfizer when I was there that we would go to award meetings and people would be eliminated from promotional opportunities, not being told that openly, but they may have been eliminated because they come with a spouse and their spouse is over drinking, intoxicated, not able to articulate. So when they start thinking about, if I have those two influencing these up-and-coming people in an organization, do I want them to represent them in that way? So image makes up a big difference, and image is something that people won't tell you may have eliminated you, but image makes up a big difference about how they see you. Can I see you leading someone? Can you see yourself leading someone? So image is very important. But what stood out was exposure, right? And I love the mafia movies, and they talk about it. A friend of mine is a friend of yours. So when you start thinking about a network and about the importance of networking, the other thing we can do to help people advance is getting people to understand the power of their network. You just don't join a fraternity or sorority just to be hanging out and partying. You join a sorority or fraternity for multiple reasons, but there's no more power than being a part of something, meaning that I'm not selecting someone for this opportunity because they're a friend of mine, but when you start thinking about performance is there and the image is there, but now my exposure to be able to help them get farther because of who I know. One of the challenges we face in this society is that we don't have enough people in line to give cuts. And I say it, you know, not in a time of we're going to give people cuts that don't deserve it, but there's been far too long that we get upset because there's more people in line that look like them that they can offer and give cuts to. And it's time that when we get opportunities and we're in positions where we've earned our positioning, that we don't take for granted that, hey, we want someone that we have things in common with. We want someone that that we would be proud of to see and be an example of us being able to pave a way. So we can't shy away from, once we get a position, to not be able to look for and intentfully look for someone that looks like you, that is confident, that has the image and does all those things. So exposure is so, so important. And we have to share this concept that Colin Powell shared with our people, because a lot of times people will go into and get caught up in this fairness in life. And we know life is not fair. I don't know who told us that in the beginning, that somehow life was fair, but life is not fair. But if you understand how the game is played and you understand how to leverage what your voice is and where you sit, you understand how equally important all of us are when it comes to the positions and ability to be able to be the change that we want to see. So truly, I'm inspired by what you were sharing. Would love for you to come down to PAL to hear like the full breadth of it and how we could even add some of the things that you're doing and give you a platform to be able to expose some of those concepts to those influencers or trusted sources that are in these programs in there. And PAL is a great platform to be able to align you with some of those things so we can do an even greater work. So hopefully that helps and replies to some of the things that you commented on.
Yeah, one quick thing. Dr. Long has this T-shirt. On the front of the T-shirt, it has a young man studying, doing schoolwork, and it has another young man on the side in Egyptian gear studying, doing schoolwork, and the back is in a pyramid. And it says, when you know your greatness, when you know your history, you know your greatness. When you know your history, you know your greatness. And my six-year-old daughter wrote the back of the T-shirt. On her way to school, she goes to a Christian school, predominantly white. She told the other kids in her class, I make no apologies for my greatness. So at 6 years old, she said, I make no apologies for my greatness.
So I added that to the T-shirts that I do. I use those as teaching points. So when you know your history, you know your greatness, and I make no apologies for my greatness. And that came out the mouth of a six-year-old.
I love it. Thank you so very much. And I also like this, the pie concept. And I'd like to talk more about that. And I think that's phenomenal from Dr. Colin Powell. So we're going to move to our co-host. We'll start with Dr. Tatum and then Dr. Cannon. And I know we've got still some hands up. And right after that, then we're going to come to our audience again. Feel free, again, to tap. Press 1 on your phones. I want to remind you, just press 1 on your phones, and we will get to you for sure. Dr. Tatum.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. This has been a very informative night. Not only did we cover solutions and cover actual plans to execute to help our youth across the nation, which that's what HR 1242 is about, with Nick Cannon being the ambassador and James Cannon, the president of the Nick Cannon Foundation. We're trying to raise $1 billion plus. Our goal is to get to $10 billion so we can get this information that can have grants to carry out this beautiful program that your guest is carrying out. I'm going to share with you something I've been working on. I haven't disclosed this to you, Dr. Lee, but I'm working with a space program as part of the Orbital Reef. It's called Orbital Reef, which is low orbit, which is part of the Blue Origin thing, which is a part of a new space station. The old space station has been up in orbit for 40 years, and that is pretty much becoming obsolete. And this new venture, which is backed by NASA, is going to allow commercial travel to low orbit, and they will be able to do studies at low cost for commercial travel. People will be able to live in low orbit in space to study things that will help our environment. So I'm working with that space program, and definitely want to see our young African Americans be a part of this. This is new things. If you look up Orbital Reef or Blue Origin, you'll find out that billions of dollars are being poured into it. It's going to be the number one space travel in the world globally, because as the old space station has pretty much become obsolete after 40 years. So I'm currently working with that program, and that's going to be a part of what we will be bringing to the table, which is HR 1242, to keep our young African-American men and women informed of what's next. So that's the next thing. So I just want to say that, and then keep doing the work that you're doing. But please look up Blue Origin, Orbital Reef, which is low orbit living, where they actually will be able to deploy three stories of apartments where you can live in space and be able to travel at low cost. That's the next thing. So that's what I'm on, and I support you. God bless.
Thank you so much, and we definitely will be talking about that. Dr. Cannon.
Outstanding, everybody. Outstanding conversation for a lot of reasons tonight, particularly when we start talking about young men. You know, my heart goes out to young men in this nation. I have 5 sons. I love them tremendously. And, you know, but I was a knucklehead young man, that a young boy, that it took a whole lot for God to grab my attention. A lot of good men came across my path and tried to help me make sense of some of the things I was dealing with in life. And as I look back, I appreciate those men that God sent into my life, that spoke into my life, that didn't give up, you know. And so I know what it takes to get to another level. And it does take mentorship. It takes counsel, as we talked about, you know. And sometimes, you know, you have to seek that counsel out in your own community. You may not be able to go get a professional counselor. You may not be privilege to get a doctor to slow down and give you quality time, but there's people in our communities that we can talk about. I started my son off in with Charlotte, North Carolina, with 10 other young boys, and my four sons as well at that time, in a media program where they was able to interview the 100 most important people in the city. And those young kids took off. And at that time, we only had to connect them to the public access stations that were in the city. So they had to get their show approved and greenlit and, you know, a lot of, you know, politics, you know. But when the Internet came out and it gave us the ability to produce and upload, I had a chance to travel a little bit with Jesse Jackson and Tavis Smiley and a lot of other good programs where they were giving to young people and they were speaking into the lives of young people. And the only thing I had to say to them that it looked like they were missing was, you're not keeping the cameras rolling. You're doing great things, but you're not capturing it for, you're not putting it in a capsule for history. You're not capturing it. And, you know, I only stumbled upon it, my sons and I, you know, how powerful the media was. And if you understand that Bob Johnson became one of the richest black men in America because of the media, Oprah Winfrey became one of the richest women, Afro-American women, because of the media. And what I learned with my son Nick was that if I teach these young kids how to communicate, how to articulate, how to go into a meeting and sell an ideal, you know, I too had the privilege to learn from good men on the football field and the basketball field. But there was a gentleman that taught me martial arts, Grandmaster Wilson, out of San Diego, and he was a judge. Not only was he a judge, but he was a medical doctor, and he was a minister. And so he was able to get out on the mat and sweat with us and teach us martial arts, but he was also able to prepare me to go to college. He taught me the difference between socialism and communism, and he taught me the beauty of America, honor, country, and duty. So when I finished sweating in the martial arts class, he prepared me and prepared us to go into the classrooms and become scholars and become great listeners. And I think that's what our young people need. And what I found out, and your program sounds outstanding, and one of the things that Dr. Tatum and I and Dr. Mary Lee and the team, what we're trying to do with young people is to give them a show just like this. If you're working with young people, okay, well, we want to hear them. We may not be able to come watch and play, but if we can hear them over the Internet hosting and articulating a show, then that will make us proud from all over the country. We can help book shows for those young people. You can do shows around your athletic league and what you're doing in your community. But we got to get these kids and these young people to power up and to do it as a team. If you give me 25 young people, break them up in five groups, and then let them go live, start their own show as a team, produce their own commercials, write a book together on your show, and push that bad boy over the Internet so those young people learn that we as men can teach them how to make money too. We can teach them how to block and tackle and throw a football and kick, and but we also want to be able to teach them how to be entrepreneurs. We want to teach them how to seize the means of production and control, and it's going to take us to do that. We can teach critical race facts or theories and beg them to teach it in the schools, but why don't we just teach it in our churches? We have our black churches, and if we make sure that our kids understand the facts, that we don't teach them about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, but we teach them about the facts of life. And like you said, my brother, the games that are being played, America is a game that's being played, but we're being dealt a bad deck from the bottom of the deck. And we've been playing Monopoly for 400 years, and we ain't got paid yet. So I think the question of the day may be critical race theory, but after you look at the facts, the United Nations did an investigation, a 12-year report, and they said pay Afro-American people immediately after they looked at 240 years of slavery. If they looked at the Jim Crow laws that were applied to Negro people in America, after they looked at the mass incarceration of black folk, Negro, Afro-American locked up in jail cells in America, they said, pay these people immediately. And most people have never even seen the report of United Nations. So before we even start talking about reparations, I think you need to take a look at the report. We need to look at what Mullahan said in 1968. If we don't build the black family, if we take the man out, then we're going to destroy the morals and we're going to destroy the strength of this people. So the facts are simply this, that we owed reparations. So when they say they don't want to talk about critical race theory, great. Ask them, do they want to talk about reparations? Because that really should be the question of the day. That should what we should want to be taught in the school system until we get it. Critical race theory is the history of that thing. That's first base. We already on third base, and we need to take this thing on home. The in the month of February, the cry should be #Tag reparation. We want our money. Dr. King said we came to this place to get a check, and they shot our leader in the head. At least we should stand up and continue to march for the check for our children, not for us, but it's for our grandchildren. So when they come before this world economy, it's kind of like if we're talking about football and athletics, it's kind of like a rich kid going to a rich school playing on a rich football team with rich coaches, and he has even if he don't make it in football, he already has an inheritance. He already has his college paid for. And then we have this young black kid who's coming from a poor college, and all he's got is hope that he can play this game to a point where he can get an opportunity. He has no scholarships locked in, paid for. He has no inheritance, but yet he's got to compete. He's got to show up and compete. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we need to make sure that when our young men, our kids, our Negro kids who deserve $20 trillion for what our ancestors went through, that we as the adults have fought for nothing less but their reparation. Pay them so when they come out of college and high school, they got at least $250,000 waiting for them to make some quality decisions with. And I think that's the critical race facts, that we need to talk about reparations until they don't want to hear that no more, until they pay it. But if we don't bring that subject up, if we be sidetracked by every other conversation, you know, even the conversation of the black man has been shot, we got to pay attention to that. But we had our leaders before the election, we had them on the run. Every one of them, had them talking about reparations. And then somebody got shot outside. They killed a black man outside. We had them at the table. All of the candidates, they had to address the subject of reparations. And then somebody got shot. Somebody got killed. And we got up from the table where we had them to discuss, ready to sign reparations, and we start marching about killing a black man when we needed to stay at the table and make sure that we got what we needed for our grandchildren, the $20 trillion, because if young men knew that when they get out of high school, they got $250,000 when they graduate, their mama's going to make sure they finish high school. Their mama's going to make sure that they get that $250,000, that they don't shoot nobody and go to jail before they get their money. And their mama going to make sure that they finish college if they got $250,000 back pay waiting on them. Their mama gonna make sure that they finish college. And so I think that the question of the day should be reparations. That's all we should be talking about. If they don't want to talk about the critical race theory, great. Well, let's talk about reparation. Let's teach that to the kids in elementary school, that the Negro people in America deserve reparations because. That's where we should start the conversation. Let's don't start it back on first base. Let's start it right where we are. Let's bring them back to the table. We know we've marched. Stop killing us, but let's bring them back to the table to sign the document so that we get what's deserved to us as Negro people in this country, which is a $20 trillion debt. Dr. Lee, I appreciate you so much for this conversation. Get my book, y'all. It's called How to Understand the Critical Race Facts and Stop the Hating After 400 years. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee.
Absolutely. And thank you. Absolutely. We're going to go to Dr. Moncrief, and then we're kind of summing everything up now. And Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Long, Dr. Time. Oh, let's see. But before we do that, I want to double check. For your phone number is 480, and your last four digits are 7196. You are live. 480, last four digits 7196. Are you there? Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay, so Dr. Moncrief?
Yes. Yes, I think the conversation tonight has been very enlightening. Reparations is important. It's on the top of the list. I don't know how much that's going to trickle down into Dr. Moncrief's pockets for the debt that this country owes the Moncrief's family, okay? But what I do know is I want my nieces, my nephews, I want them to understand why we are where we're at, and I want them to fight their way back out. And I want them to fight their way to a place where when we talk about the critical race theory, that it's taught in the schools so that they will understand, not just from me, but it's taught in the schools, it's taught in the churches. And I want them to fight their way back so that they can figure out the solutions that they need to be successful, not just in the white society, but be successful as young African-American males and females, to be successful in becoming what they want to become and not letting this system decide by the time that they're in the eighth grade that they will be in the penal system. They'll be locked up in jail. I want them to decide when they're in the eighth grade that they want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a radio personality, and go and achieve that goal. So that's what I think about when I think about the importance of the critical race theory being taught in the schools, the importance of what was said tonight about by Mr. Jameson, and actually implementing what we've learned. So I'm going to leave that to the other remarks that people have to make.
Yes, thank you so much. And we're definitely going to be implementing. That's our next, after we're done with talking about the solutions, we're taking note. We will definitely be working on implementation, and all of us will be a part of that. I want to ask you to, I want to invite all of you to talk with your neighbors and talk to your family, friends, people who are not on the show. Ask them to join us, particularly during this time. If they're not able to join us, ask them for solutions so that you can bring them back to us and say, you know, we can share, you know, what our kids are feeling and what our neighbors are saying and our family and our coworkers. We want to really involve everyone. We want everyone to be engaged in this stage, and then we move on to the next. And this all is real, people. This is all very, very, very real. This is dear to my heart. Solutions, you know, creating and building and expanding entrepreneurship, bringing funds into our communities that are already allocated to us, that's being controlled by white entrepreneurs and by, you know, others coming in, you know, literally just stealing from us. And so this is what neighborhood commerce is all about. And we want to see success. We want to, you know, bring these solutions and engage people, change people's lives. That's what we're here for. So talk to your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, your supervisors, those who don't like you. Talk to the gang members if you can get to them. Because even someone said earlier, I believe it was Dr. Tynes that shared, I mean, the gang members are definitely utilizing entrepreneurial skills and, you know, structure and organization, you know, family, you know, love amongst themselves. And so camaraderie, I mean, we can help them and show them how this can be turned and their activities can be turned into, you know, prosperous legal entities and entrepreneurships and in order to change their lives. This is what we want to do. So I
Dr.
believe
Lee,
yes.
Real
go
quickly,
ahead.
I wanted to throw three examples since you mentioned that, and I did put this is in the book for conversation. You know, and we talked about it before. The realistic possibilities of doing the research of what it would take for us to have a state lottery in each state and a federal lottery that was where the proceeds went to the reparation pool. You know, not that we have to create the money that goes into the reparation pool, but you know, if they're creating industries right in our community that we're getting nothing from, and we can mobilize and requisition, you know, some of that money to go into a pool for us, then, you know, that's just wise on our part. You know, a state lottery would 100% of that would be valuable. Secondly, where we're allowing them to legalize marijuana all across this country, medical, medicinally, recreationally, and they're doing it. And again, you know, we went to jail for this product. Many of our family members went to jail. Some have lost their lives for selling this. Now they're legalizing it and packaging it in a beautiful, beautiful packages. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, you know, we're getting nothing from that. My question is, again, if we mobilize, I mean, even I'm a minister, but if we mobilize from a business standpoint and requisition as a people, we want 50% of anything that got cannabis in it. We want that to go into the pot to help pay us. If we come up with some of our own solutions, if we look at the fact that they're coming up with new money, cryptocurrency, people becoming millionaires off the blockchain and this cryptocurrency, and we're sitting by and letting them bring it in, and we're not requisitioning as a people any of it, why can't we requisition 20% of any new cryptocurrency that hits the market. They got to regulate the cryptocurrency industry anyways. Why can't we strongly be at the board, at the table, saying since y'all going to regulate this thing, the Negro people are saying they want 20% of the cryptocurrency profits that's coming into America to go into a pot or into the pool to help pay reparations. I just think, you know, there's some solutions. If we're looking for solutions, let's get a lottery. The Indian people got, you know, casinos all over this nation. They didn't have to march in the street and shoot and kill to get it, you know. So if we follow that, you know, we can demand and commerce too. You know, I think, and these are just three that most people would say, well, these are kind of bad, you know, I don't gamble, I don't smoke, and, you know, I don't do crypto. But these are industries, billion-dollar industries that they're creating right in front of us, and I'm saying we're getting nothing. And so I'm saying not only these three, there's many other billion-dollar industries that they're creating right in front of us. And I think as a people, if we're going to march in the street, we should be marching in the street to make sure that our grandchildren are going to be taken care of when they come out of high school and college with the proper funds that they're going to need to compete. So I was just saying those are three examples for conversation that research could be done. The real research could be done on what it takes to own a lottery, to set up a lottery. The real research could be done on those three industries. And even more, Dr. Lee, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We will certainly we've made notes, and I think that's something that we should look at into doing, at least starting the research for the processes. And you're absolutely right, absolutely correct. So Dr. Long, we're summarizing ourselves tonight. Mr. Jamerson will be the last voice who will do a complete summary and, you know, and his final thoughts. So Dr. Long's few minutes and Dr. Tyne's for a few minutes, and then we're going to wrap it up with our special guest tonight.
Again, I want to thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lee, for, again, the invite to provide some solutions in terms of our youth, our people. And as I've stated over the last month or so, my particular solution is to be more motivated and consistent with my level of patience with myself, our people, and particularly children within our community. Again, I strongly agree with Mr. Jamerson's perspective in terms of collaborations. And when you think about his positioning with Detroit PAL, and particularly with the amount of youth he engages on a daily basis, while in the backdrop, and I don't recall Mr. Jamerson mentioning this too much in terms of his associations with the four major sports teams in Detroit, Red Wings, Detroit Lions, Pistons, and the Tigers, imagining what these young people are thinking and what they're witnessing with a person such as Mr. Jamerson and his stature being the leader, yet also being supported by these major athletic teams. I believe and agree with all the speakers in terms of their unique solutions. And when it comes to critical race theory or thought, you know, I think we have to begin with a sense and a level of patience in terms of educating those within our community who have no idea what we're talking about. So, again, I think it takes a level of patience on our own and to be more flexible in terms of how to engage various members within our community. Again, thank you for tonight's show. Again, I want to give a shout-out to Mr. Robert Jameson of Detroit PAL for his tremendous work.
Thank you. We appreciate you so much. Dr. Tyne.
Yeah, thank everyone. Thank everyone for participating tonight, coming out, especially Mr. Jameson, because I know he had to actually juggle the schedule, take time out, and I know he took a little bit of time from the family, so I appreciate that. So the thing is that African-centeredness, or the African-centered curriculum, it re-evolved, and now it's called the critical race theory. But the critical race theory was not developed by, you know, African-Americans. It has Hispanic, had white, and had black. And but the African-American community in particular is trying to crystallize that to make sure that the African-American history is taught, where the other groups are all are trying to get their part in, too. In terms of the United Nations evaluate and gave a failing grade to the United States, not just based on reparations, but also they condemned the policing policies of the United States, and they condemned the United States for still allowing slavery officially on the constitutional books. Slavery is still allowed in the United States if you are in prison. If you are black and you go to prison, you are considered a slave, and that's what the Constitution says. And so it was condemned on that. In terms of reparations, before I can get in that, I have to transition from the prisons. You are right. A lot of the drug dealers are there, but the drug dealers who are in prison are chemists who are using their skills in the wrong way. They're able to take simple drugs and make them into narcotics. You have their businessmen that they're trying to maximize, make a profit on, and they're doing marketing. So, but we have not channeled that positive energy in the right direction. So going back in terms, therefore, when you look at the reparations, we have to look at the fact that, one, that Dr. Claude Anderson is in federal court for now maybe 30 years suing the United States government for reparations. It was Dr. Claude Anderson and Reparation Ray of Detroit that put reparations on the front line, and Reparations Ray reached out to John Conyers, but he did not have the facts and history like Dr. Claude Anderson. It's Dr. Claude Anderson that presented before Congress to get this ball rolling. And many people are forgetting that, and other people are trying to talk about reparations. But Dr. Claude Anderson is the co-father of reparations and the one who's put his own personal money on the line to be in the Supreme Court fighting for reparations, and also fighting for reparations from the Native people, you call American Indians, for the 1866 Indian Treaty, which guaranteed reimbursement of reparations to Native Africans, or what we call descendants of enslaved Africans that were enslaved by the Native Americans, American Indians. The five civilized tribes were slave owners and supported the South during the Civil War, and they signed a treaty in 1866, not only freeing the Africans that they had as slaves, but also supposedly providing them with money and reparations, and they also should have the same ability to be able to own the casinos, as mentioned earlier. What you have to know is that later on, after this treaty, the Dole Commission, D-O-L-L Commission, was commissioned to draw up censuses, and whites were able to pay $5 to be added, which was a lot of money back then, to be added to the Native American census so that they can get these benefits. Historically, Native Americans were black-skinned, then they became brown-skinned, and after the Dalles Commission, where people paid to join, they became white-skinned. But when they do the genetic studies on the whites, they found out that they don't have any Native American, and only Native American blood is if they have married a Native American. So, but nevertheless, they're still old. The last thing I'll say that Dr. Long is pointing out that Malcolm X, up in New York and in Boston, when the workers had came off the fields trying to sell fish back then, trying to sell newspapers, and no one was buying, no one was listening, that they told Malcolm that they should just focus on the people who knew what time it was and not the ones who were lost and didn't know. And Malcolm turned to them and said that we're all they got. We're all they got. So that's Mr. Jameson, that's Mr. Long, Dr. Longs, Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Mary Lee, Mr. Cannon, Dr. Tatum. We're all they got. So what happens is we have to keep putting the message out there. Those who got a call to listen to us are going to listen to us. Those who not, so I agree with Michael Times. We cannot try to force house Negroes to become field Negroes, because that's why we haven't made it anywhere this part. So I say that we need to support PALS. I'll definitely, when things are better, come down there, work with PALS. Like I said, I was a PALS basketball coach, but I always coached self-esteem. And I think that's what we have to do, mentorship, that we have to have our kids academically tighten up and not whiten up, have our kids academically tighten up, not whiten up. And we as adults, we need to blacken up. We need to blacken up, and so that we carry that black pride and self-esteem like our forefathers did in the 60s and 70s that gave us our opportunities to hold these careers that we have today. Thank you.
And thank you, and I completely, totally agree. There hasn't, my children were part of PAL. My daughter was cheerleader. My son, of course, he did. I think he was doing baseball, and then he did other things too, other sports, but value, a huge value across this country. And I'm so appreciative of your being with us tonight and sharing your, you have so many, many solutions. And we're definitely, this is only the beginning. And so we're asking you now that the floor is yours to wrap it up, take your time that you need, and just to summarize this up for tonight. Thank you, Mr. Jameson.
No, I first want to say, man, just very much always enjoy these types of discussions, because there's so many pearls that each of us can take with us, and there are a few that definitely I've taken some notes on. I want to thank each of you for just giving me this opportunity, because whenever I have a chance to speak to the things that, you know, we're doing at Detroit PAL, once again, I know many of them wouldn't have occurred if it weren't people before me as well as people that are with me to help us do the things that we're doing. I just want to highlight a couple things that stood out to me during today's call. The first thing is just the importance of this coalition. You have to have everybody wherever they sit to be the change that they want to see, to ring the bell that they can ring. And one thing, for instance, that I couldn't emphasize enough is that you sit in a corporation, if you sit in an organization and you don't go to HR and you don't demand that internships and opportunities for exposures for our youth as well as for our college students aren't available, then definitely that's something that you can do, and you can ring the bell for where you sit at. The other thing that was mentioned and what I love was that the conversations are around billions and trillions. When you think about the amount of dollars that have come and go through the economy on any given year, we, a lot of times, when people get platforms, don't ask for enough, in my opinion. For instance, in Detroit, we talked about getting $55 million worth of laptops, and we were applauded and excited about it. And yes, there's excitement around $55 million. But if you start thinking holistically of all the needs that are there, we didn't ask for enough, right? We gave $55 million to people that weren't within the community, and those dollars never recirculated, right? The other thing is we didn't demand the type and the excellence of the equipment that we were getting for our youth, and then we didn't demand the infrastructure that we needed. We then had to go back and try to get it, but it was too late after that point. So ability to be able to make sure that when we're asking for something that we ask for enough and
right.
Think of all the different things, because what expectation is there outside of excellence, right? And so if excellence is only acceptable expectation, we need to look through it in a thorough way. And we also need to know when we show up and we talk, and after the protest, we need to know what are our demands. Often we'll get there and we finally say, and they ask you, what do you want? Outside of saying that we're mad, outside that we're angry at what didn't take place, we have to be clear and specific on what are we asking for. So asking for enough and then being clear and specific on what we want, and knowing the types of solutions that we know that we need, then we need to speak to it. The last thing that I'll speak to is that equipping. And I'll go back to why was there an effort to focus on literacy? Because we thought that was foundational. Why are we looking at implementing, and why have we implemented the business canvas model? Because it aligns to being helped to develop that entrepreneurial gene, right? Why are we focused on communication? Because we know communication, along with education, is that currency of the future, meaning that if you can't ask for it and you don't understand what you're asking for and you can't speak to what you're going to do with it, then a lot of times you're just not going to give it. And then finally, just to end on having a greater understanding of how things happen, how people get promoted, how people advance, understanding performance, understanding the role of image, and then understanding the role of exposure. Each of you have a platform that can expose other people mm-hmm. to, and to help them to find their greatness. And if we all find our greatness, just imagine what the world can look like. And so I'm thankful, I'm grateful for each of you, and encouraged by this conversation. And as always, I never turn down prayers. This is tireless work. But I know that your prayers, your support go a long way in what we're able to accomplish and how we've been able to accomplish the things that we're doing. And so if you see me or I see you out and about, let it be known, because I know some people may be on this line. And please reach out. Please come down and visit Detroit PAL. Please allow me and give me platforms that you may have, because we can't do it alone. Like I always tell people, we may serve 15,000, and that's phenomenal in the city of Detroit. There's over 300,000+ youth that are in the city, so we are not competing with anyone. It takes all of us to be able to be the change that we want to see, and we truly need to support each other versus how they program us to go against each other and think that there's a lack of or scarcity of resources that are out there. So with that, I just say once again, thank you, and wish all of you well in this fight that we have. It's definitely a good fight, and it's worth the fight.
We certainly appreciate you, and we thank you over and over and over again. And as I said, this is the beginning. You have just shared this so very much, and we've got notes to take notes each and every single time. And I just want to thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and to all of our co-hosts and those behind the scenes. I appreciate you, to our listeners, to all of our people, our guests, and our audience. We love you and we thank you. And if we have our sister, our dear sister minister lady, Sister Judith. Are you here, Judith? Judith, are you here? Well, we're going to ask Dr. Tatum. Are you still here, Dr. Tatum?
I'm still here, Dr. Lee. I'm still here.
Thank you. Could you please end us up in prayer? And as your prayer for the Cannon family, for Mr. Jamerson's work, and everyone who's on our line and listening tonight. We love you and we thank you, Dr. Tatum.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Lee, for our outstanding program once again. Lord, as we come to the close of this program, that's an opening to future programs, we just trust that this information resonates to all the people that and that we touch their hearts. Thank you for Brother Robert Jamerson, his dedication of young African-Americans in our nation. We perish for a lack of knowledge. This information is definitely knowledge that we can use and to impart, and we can disseminate across the nation. Our goal is to change the trajectory of our people. Give you the praise, Lord.
because we have to look within ourselves to save ourselves, because we have been done in such a way that has been discarded as a dirty rag, but we're God's precious oil and his anointing in these last days. And we thank you for the leadership of Dr. Mary Lee, Dr. James Cannon, and Nick Cannon as ambassador, as we go on the front lines to bring in this billion plus 10 billion or more to keep our story alive as we help our people. In Jesus' name, amen.
God bless you all. Until this is Dr. Mary Lott, and we love you all. Good night.